This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
The U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick now says that tariffs on nearly all products from Mexico and Canada will likely get delayed by 1 month. President Trump could make that announcement later today, but as of now, those 25% tariffs are still in place, and it comes a day after the White House said it's granting a one-month exemption on any autos coming into the country.
The craziness of the Trump administration relationship with Canada was on full display this past week, as seemingly every day involved some form of policy change on tariffs. First on, then slightly delayed for some goods, then slightly delayed for more goods, and by week's end, threats of new tariffs. And that's just tariffs. There are reports of reconsidering centuries-old border treaties, disputes over fentanyl, tax policy, and much more. Given the uncertainty, I recently co-wrote an op-ed in the Globe and Mail together with Dr. Koumenon Wilson that sought to put the spotlight on another issue that could come to the fore if the economic battle moves beyond tariffs to other issues. In this case, privacy, data localization, and health data. Dr. Wilson is a specialist in general internal medicine at the Ottawa Hospital, chief executive officer and chief scientific officer at the Breer Research Institute, a professor and faculty of medicine clinical research chair in digital health innovation at the University of Ottawa, and a member of the University of Ottawa's Center for Health Law, Policy, and Ethics. He joins me on the podcast to discuss why we should be paying attention to health privacy, AI, and the location of our data. Koumenon, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Thank you for joining. You know, we've been working together on this issue, and it's good to have the chance to talk about it through this medium. We're recording this one day after the full start of the tariff battle between Canada and the United States, with 25% tariffs from the U.S. on Canadian goods and a major reciprocal response from the Canadian government. It's crazy times, and it's certainly possible that by the time this episode drops, the U.S. may have looked for an exit ramp or perhaps even responded with even more. As I say, these are pretty crazy, dangerous times. But now that the tariffs have kicked in, I wanted to focus a bit on a joint op-ed that we published in the Globe and Mail just before this took place. And it sought to put the spotlight on another issue that I think could come to the fore if this economic battle moves beyond tariffs to other issues. And in this case, it's a mix of privacy, data localization, or what some refer to as data residency, and health data. So we thought it would be useful to walk through the op-ed and expand on some of our concerns. I'm going to focus a bit on the privacy side. You'll focus more on the health data side. Why don't we start more on the health data side? You had expressed some concerns around privacy of Canadian health data. Can you talk a bit about what sparked your concerns?
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, crazy times. And this is a bit of a wake-up call to us. So no matter what happens with the tariffs, this issue still exists. So, you know, amongst my many hats, one is I was a co-founder of a health technology company called Can Immunize that helps Canadians manage their immunization data. And we created the first app, I think around 2011, 2012 after H1N1. We built it at the Ottawa Hospital at the time. And then as a second phase of funding, we proposed to put it on the cloud, put the data on the cloud. So we were working with AWS, and I think we were one of the first examples of Canadian health data being put on the AWS server that was in Canada. And they actually wrote a case study about it. And at that time, I became familiar with this issue of the USA Patriot Act and why this data residency or data localization was so important, that our health data was potentially accessible for national security reasons by the US. And this, of course, subsequently resided as the threat of terrorism resided. But now the issue is back at the forefront. And over this time period, I'd heard some mixed opinions of whether data localization in and of itself would provide us that protection. It sort of didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. It's just because it's on another territory, still an American company that hosts the data. And, you know, as we're aware of, the current president of the U.S. likes to use arcane legal justifications for things he does, like the Illegal Aliens Act for deportations and and other specious arguments to move forward his policy agenda, it didn't seem crazy at all that he would find some way to access our health data, and particularly because of his obsession with health AI, and AI in general. And that's when I reached out to you for your opinion, and you sent me your outstanding UNB Law Journal article. UNB is my alumni, so great to see that. And I shared that in some of my circles, and it obviously caused some concerns.
Okay, interesting. It's always nice when a more than 20-year-old article remains relevant. Doesn't happen very often, at least in my world. That's a good start to explain what brought you to this issue. And it's interesting that you've had some background specifically around data in the cloud. But I think the system for a lot of Canadians is pretty invisible. You go to a physician or you go to a lab or whatever it happens to be. They know that some data is being collected, but they don't have a strong sense of what's actually happening. Can you peel back the curtain a little bit about what does happen with our health data?
Yeah, again, the unfortunate situation here is we have outsourced a lot of our health care to the US. The argument was always, the line was, you never get fired for, hiring IBM. That's Canadian health care is driven by risk aversion. So going with big US corporations, which often have good solutions, with a risk-averse approach, even though they may be substantially more expensive. But it basically took away the Canadian economy, the ability for Canadian companies to succeed here. So we our healthcare EMR, just an electronic medical record system, for hospitals is dominated by two, maybe three vendors. So Epic is the behemoth in the space. They're privately owned. Cerner with Oracle is the other major vendor. Meditech is also involved. And so I think all of Alberta's EMR systems are on Epic for hospitals, and Nova Scotia is going fully to Cerner. But they're all American. And then where does most, if not all, of our cloud data reside? On three major US cloud services, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, and AWS, Amazon AWS. So either way, even if we had a Canadian company hosted, manage the data, it's going to likely be hosted on a U.S. cloud service. I think health sovereignty, health data sovereignty, is needs to rise up in importance as we move forward through all of this.
Okay, that helps explain who has the data. Can you also explain a little bit why this is important, or why health data in particular is so important at this time?
Yeah, I think on a positive note, we are in a bit of an inflection point in technological progress, thanks largely again to Canadians, though we're not benefiting. Jeffrey Hinton won the Nobel Prize for generative AI, Canadian, and we are world leaders in generative AI and AI. But in order to create AI algorithms, you need great data, and we are uniquely positioned in Canada to lead health AI algorithm development because we have one of the few population-based public health systems. So we have truly representative data for our entire population, which is invaluable for developing these algorithms. Now, unfortunately, it's challenging for private corporations in Canada to use our health data for commercial purposes. And I understand why, their privacy protections. But the economy that are dictating this otherwise. So one in four VC dollars in healthcare are now going to health AI. And we know Trump is obsessed with AI, and he one of his first announcements was Oracle and OpenAI supporting health AI algorithm development for mRNA therapeutics. I think it's inevitable they will be trying to access whatever data that's available to develop these algorithms for commercial purposes. And our data is particularly rich. So, I don't think this is a stretch. It's just we have this bizarre situation where Canadians may not be able to use our own health data, but the US is using our health data.
That is an odd situation to find ourselves in, and it highlights why there might be some real value here and why potentially this is an issue that could escalate over time. Maybe it's worth having me jump in to talk a little bit about the privacy side, having now explained why this data in particular is so important. You talked about how there are limits to how Canadians can actually use this data, but there are even further limits or issues that arise on the privacy side. So let me just unpack that a little bit. Certainly, many of the listeners to this podcast will be familiar with PIPEDA, the private sector privacy law. It was potentially going to be updated as part of the government's effort to update privacy laws in Bill C-27, but that bill has now died. We've got a number of provinces that have also developed health privacy laws, so more narrowly targeted specifically on health. But the question as to whether or not you also need to consider the potential to limit essentially permitting data to exit the jurisdiction, should you require that data remain here, and we can get into the question of who, even if it is here, who controls it, but should we limit that ability for data to go elsewhere, dates back in some ways to that article that you talked about more than 20 years ago. And in fact, it was a case out of British Columbia involving health data that put this issue on the map for a period of time. And it involved an effort by the BC government to outsource management of some of its health data. They put that issue or that those services up for tender. It became clear that there were only two companies that were going to bid for it. Both were U.S. based. And so at that time was an era of the USA Patriot Act post 9/11. There were questions about the risk to the Canadian health data if it was going to be outsourced from a very large province to a U.S. based entity. Now, it was the union that was going to be affected that raised it, so there was some amount of self-interest here. But I think the issue did capture some attention. And in some ways, we were a little bit ahead of the game, because in the years that followed, there were a growing number of countries that began to focus on this issue of, should you require data to remain within the jurisdiction, this data residency requirement, or what's sometimes referred to as data localization. So this has become an increasing large issue. It comes up as part of e-commerce related discussions. It comes up certainly as part of privacy, and obviously in this context, with respect to health data. And the end response to understand, well, where does the law sit, is by and large, Canadian law does not restrict the ability for data to go anywhere. In fact, the one of the core principles of Canadian privacy law is what's known as the accountability principle, which means that whoever collects the data is responsible for it. It can go anywhere in the world, and that entity that collected it remains responsible, sort of no matter what. This question then comes up, should we go further and seek to limit the disclosure of data outside the jurisdiction? And in the aftermath of the BC case, we did have a number of provinces start saying, well, you know what, if we've got certain data that is particularly sensitive, and health data, of course, really qualify in that regard, then there ought to be some limitations. And even the federal government's efforts to move to the cloud recognized that for certain kinds of data, it made sense to keep it local, the perspective being that it would be far easier or far more effective to have the Canadian Privacy Commissioner, the Provincial Privacy Commissioner in the case of BC, be able to assert their jurisdiction and apply their local laws to ensure that it had an appropriate level of privacy protection. So that's where the law stands around data localization. But you get into this additional issue that I think you just mentioned, this notion of, well, even if the data is localized, even if it remains within the jurisdiction, is it still going to be the case that a company is not going to disclose it to, let's say, a foreign entity if they're required to do so? And so you mentioned, for example, that you were actively using an Amazon cloud. It could be based in Canada. They have Canadian-based services. But if push came to shove, if they were pressured to actually move forward, would they actually keep that data secret and not disclose it if mandated to do so? And that's that question of, if you have an entity that has essentially control over the data in some capacity, because it's been uploaded, it's on their servers or what have you, and they find themselves, I guess, between the proverbial rock and a hard place. On the one hand, they've got some domestic laws and perhaps their contracts that say you can't disclose. On the other hand, they've got another entity saying that you must disclose. What do you do? And we talk about this in the op-ed and make reference to this notion of a blocking statute. And what that refers to is the idea that where you've got essentially a clear conflict. You've got competing obligations that can't easily be reconciled. The question then becomes, how do you reconcile them? And by and large, the approach that we've seen, at least out of the United States, is that they will require disclosure unless the company can demonstrate that that competing law, the one that is in conflict, rises to the level of what's referred to as a blocking statute, which essentially require real penalties on their part for that disclosure. Essentially, they are being stopped from making that disclosure, and their legal obligations in that other jurisdiction are so severe, the penalties associated with it are so severe that they simply can't. The classic example in this regard would be Swiss banking laws, which, as many people will know, Switzerland's infamous for the privacy associated with banking information and deeply reluctant to disclose that. The question then, in a Canadian context, is whether or not our privacy rules might rise to the level of being a blocking statute, such that if you had an entity, regardless of where the data was located, that was faced with this question of, do I disclose or not? They would be able to point to their legal obligations and the statute in Canada and say, I simply can't. And if I do, I face significant liability. And that might well be enough to persuade a foreign court, let's say a US court, to say, you can't disclose. So that's the legal underpinning for all of this question of Canadian privacy law not really meeting this standard at the moment, the challenges that companies might well face in the context of some of these issues. It brings us then, I guess, to this next issue of the potential for demands. Can you talk a bit about what demands we might see in this context, how this data might be used, and I suppose whether or not the statute is enough, or should we even be thinking about other kinds of things to better safeguard or protect Canadian data privacy with respect to their health information?
Yeah, thanks. The blocking statute concept really intuitively makes a lot of sense to me. When the U as you know, when the USA Patriot Act was developed, it was for national security issues, for potentially to track individuals that may be at risk. That wouldn't be the purpose the US is using it for, or they could use it for that purpose, but really it's an economic reason at this time. And they can use the laws, or they can just threaten companies with not having contracts if they don't hand the data over, which we know is the favorite tactic of the government at present. The irony is this is now a national security issue for Canada. And we need to bring these things in from a security perspective, a health security and a sovereignty issue, and an economic security issue. So I don't know if there's constitutional arguments through POG or what have you to justify this. But this is not a small concern. And ideally, we eventually build Canadian companies that can manage our EMR data for our large healthcare providers and have Canadian cloud servers. But that's not going to happen overnight. That's going to take a while. And in the interim, a legal intervention, I agree with you, is absolutely necessary to buy us the time to do that. And then this is a major, we need to make a major policy shift at the federal level about supporting Canadian companies and growing, a Canadian domestic economy that we've learned the consequences of not having done that. But the big value to this data is potentially a $1 trillion economy in AI that we could be. I mean, it's strange to me. We have the best data in the world. We know that our scientists are publishing these articles regularly in top journals, using that data. And we are also the inventors of generative AI. And yet it looks like the US is going to make the money off of it, just like we developed GLP-1 and agonists and Dan Drucker in Toronto, and Denmark is making $2 billion in tax revenue over Novo Nordisk and the commercialization of that. So, I think overall we need to have Canadian companies running our health system, or maybe non-US companies, but that's not happening overnight.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting that you hearken to sort of this, in a sense, having this feeling of history repeating itself. I want to drill down a little bit more on the AI side, though, in particular. Can you explain a bit more why this data becomes so relevant and how you think that this could really spark a real leadership position for Canada?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many phenomenal potential applications of health AI. I mean, the easiest one we're seeing right now is scribe functionality and sort of natural language processing. So, family doctors' lives are miserable because of, I mean, the EMRs were supposed to make it easier. They made it much worse because of swivel medicine. You've got to type into your EMR, try to see your doctor, go back and forth. It's psychologically and mentally draining. And now with the scribe functionality, the thing can listen to the conversation. It's really remarkable, its ability to then generate the clinical note. And then it had the further ability to potentially make diagnosis, suggestions for diagnoses and therapeutic algorithm. And I mean, when I teach medicine, I teach in intro medicine on clinical service, I always teach it via algorithm and intersecting algorithm. Like, this is how an AI works. So this is a completely logical extension of it. But then well beyond that, there's so many other potential applications. This is what Trump was getting at with the announcement he made with Oracle and OpenAI, that we can use AI to help develop novel therapeutics, to explore combinations, at a speed in which the human mind just can't do, and opens up innumerable possibilities that way. Then there's also this really important issue of, at these health AI algorithms that are being developed, do they work? So they're going to be developed and applied, and we need to do post-market surveillance, and that'll probably emerge as a regulatory requirement if it already isn't. In order to do that, we need to test those AI algorithms on our data, and we have the potential to do that. So there's a safety aspect as well. But one of the irony is, as terrible as it is that the US is maybe using our data to build health AI and commercialize, it's still better than them not doing it, because otherwise we're having health AI algorithms based on populations that are not representative of us being transported and used on Canadians. And this is by being overly safe, we great massive risks. By maybe not making our data accessible for these purposes, then we end up importing algorithms that have true algorithmic bias, that do not represent our populations, and are they truly safe? So there are just so many potential. I probably just this is just the tip of the iceberg of the many applications, but I think just to give you a flavor of what's out there.
Okay. It's interesting to see how much is happening and the implications that sort of touch out, the tentacles spread out into so many areas. Why don't we close with this? In the days after our op-ed appeared in the Globe and Mail, I certainly had quite a significant amount of outreach from people in the privacy community. As I say, this issue around data localization has been a hotly debated one for some time. And I must admit, I've been a bit of a skeptic over that time, really raising questions as to whether or not it would make a difference. Given if the data is still in the hands of an entity, does it really make a difference where the data happens to be located? Questions about whether or not our attention is better focused on ensuring we've got effective domestic privacy rules, and questions about the limitations or the negative effects that data localization can have for a data-driven economy. But that said, these are different times to be sure, and some of the risks require a re-examination of some of these issues, which is why I was so happy that we went ahead and produced the piece. And so I think there's talk certainly in the legal community is, what are the implications of this sort of new world for from a privacy perspective? I just wanted to close with what you've been hearing. How is the medical community, the healthcare community, responding to some of these issues? Is this a matter that has managed to capture much attention yet, or are we still at the stage of people needing to wake up a little bit and take more seriously some of the questions about the data they collect and who has control over it and some of the risks associated with that?
Yeah, I think there are two aspects to that question. So I think up until now, people felt secure in both the combination of encryption and data localization, and they felt that was good. And with a normal, regime in the US, they're probably correct on that. But we don't live in those times. And it's not a hyperbole to say we are at a war in some form. It's a trade war, but you heard comments yesterday at as Trump was addressing Congress, there is an intention to economically cripple us and make us weak. So this is this is now resurfacing as an issue, and I think it's aware people are aware in the healthcare community that this is now a major concern. We just heard Ford say no more contracts to U.S. companies, including that would likely mean health tech sector as well. So I think this is a wake-up call. to all of us. We need to take the necessary measures. Some are longer term, some are shorter term. I think your idea of the blocking statute is a logical early step that I would hope that is adopted and provides us with some assurance. And then, of course, we definitely need to move forward with the more definitive measures. And I hope at the same time people start to realize like that we need to make this data available, more easily accessible in general in Canada. It's not just to prevent Americans from using it. We need to be able to use it because we do benefit when they use it, like I said, because it makes care better. But we just and there have been for 30 years talks and discussions on this, and it's just got to end. And we need to address this and make our data available. It's invaluable. It's an you know it's a resource. It can grow our economy, can make healthcare better. And again, I hope some good comes out of all of this, and people start to make the necessary changes.
Yeah, no, I hope so too. Well, welcome, and thank you for both reaching out initially that it sort of led to the op-ed and now the podcast, and certainly for your work on this issue and for joining me today here on the podcast.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on and your insights.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at POBox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.